My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
It's my music.
You're listening to Music of the Mat on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Music of the Mat on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andrew Rich. And today I'm joined once again by one half of the Super J-Cast. It's the one and only Damon McDonald. Hello again, Damon.
Hello. I'm making a rare appearance. I'm kind of like, I don't know, somebody who doesn't make appearances. but when you put out the bat signal, as I like to say, I'm there, and I told you that before. So I'm always down for a little Andrew Rich action.
Well, thank you. Yeah, last time we spoke, I believe Japanese wrestling fans couldn't make noise. So it's been a while. It's been a long while. And we just got through G1 season. All In was a few days ago. And now here we are with our big event, our big show, playing some music, having some fun. So it'll be a good time, Damon, I'm sure.
We're back, you know? It's everything's coming into full swing. It's like, it's coming up on the autumn season, my favorite. Sports are good. The holidays are right around the corner. Everything's coming up, Damon. Everything's coming up, Damon.
It's good to hear. That's good to hear. All right. Well, let's not waste any time here. Today's topic is called Hometown Crowd. And that means we are playing songs by artists from our hometown, home city, home state, whatever. And I actually wrote about the hometown crowd in wrestling for the Wrestling 101 project some months ago. With Can-Am Express versus Kobashi and Kikuchi, arguably the greatest hometown crowd ever. And it really just adds an extra level of, you know, emotion and atmosphere to have that crowd cheer on, their guy. It's not just a guy we like, it's our guy. He's one of us. He's from here. And that can make for a very special connection to a wrestler and for a match there, Damon.
Yeah, no doubt. I was really thrilled with the idea. I thought it was super creative. And it's weird because, you know, I'm from suburban South Jersey. So, you know, we really don't have a lot to draw from when it comes to just about. And I think the most famous thing that we might have would be like Mike Trout, you know, a baseball player. That'd be it. But I'm a stone's throw right near Philadelphia. So I think Philadelphia's had some good stuff. So I kind of picked out some of the best of what I think, you know, just kind of memories. And when I hear the song, I think the first criteria I did was, does the song remind me of Philadelphia? And I spent a ton of time in the city when I was younger. That's where all the clubs were. That's where all the bands I wanted to see were. And, you know, it's the city. So that was like the criteria. It was, okay, does this trigger something in my head to remind me of Philadelphia? And I think for various reasons, and again, as we do our little intros to the song, I'll be able to help guide you along. So this should be fun. I'm definitely digging it.
Absolutely, yes. So Damon, you have Philadelphia. I, of course, have Boston/Massachusetts. So it's a glass of water versus a glass of water there. That's the big battle going on here. And we'll go back and forth. You gave me 8 songs, so I picked 8 songs as well. And we'll have a play-out song at the end that I picked. So, Damon, let's get into it. Let's start us off here.
I'm so excited. All right. So, being a bit of a outcast growing up. I was into the punk and slash kind of new wave, kind of whatever you call alternative music back in the 80s. That was kind of like my wheelhouse. And I think if you are from this area, one of the bands that fit that mold that I've seen countless times before they hit it big with a punk rock girl, it's the Dead Milkmen. Right. And I chose probably my favorite song from them. I love the jangly guitars. It kind of reminds me of Kids in a Hall a little bit, the opening credits. So this, my first song, is the Dead Milkmen, and it's Big Lizard in My Backyard.
Big Lizard in my backyard. Can't afford to feed him anymore.
The memories. That's like there's a club called Revival, and they would play there often as well, the Trocadero, and I just, that's the song, you know. It's like, it's a goofy song, goofy lyrics. They're a goofy band, but I just dig that kind of jangly upper scale. I don't even know what I'm talking about from a musical standpoint, but that guitar sound is right in my wheelhouse. So good stuff. Good way to start.
Yeah, I noticed two recurring themes with your picks here, Damon. Almost all of them are from the 80s. That's one. And the other thing is, I'm not all that well-versed with most of the bands, but I know at least one of their songs, typically the hit. And in this case, yes, it's Punk Rock Girl. I do know that's that one. And that one has a similar style of just telling you a rambling juvenile story over jangly guitars, really. So that's kind of what I expected from the Dead Milkmen in this case, for sure.
I remember growing up and being like, before I really heard them, I was like, oh, they got to be like kind of what we might equate to like thrash metal or something. And they're really not that. they're more this. So yeah, you knew I was going to lean heavily on 80s stuff, but I do have a couple of current things in there, thrown in there. And correct, I try not to do the hits. I try to go a little deeper. And yeah, but know that these songs all mean, have a little place in my heart for Philadelphia reasons.
Of course, of course. Well, my first pick, just telling people right now, I did not pick Aerosmith or The Cars for this episode because we played them both last episode, and I decided to, you know, give them a little break. Instead, I went with the other super obvious pick because this is a rock band from Boston named Boston with an album called Boston and a song about being a rock band from Boston. So it is Boston Palooza over here, and this is Rock and Roll Band by Boston. Dancing in the Streets of Hyannis. There you go.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, talk about just a monster of a debut. I think everybody had this album back in the day. And it just came out with that signature sound and all those multi-tracked vocals and harmonies and guitars. They're unmistakable. And that's pretty much all Tom Scholz, the guitarist. Like, he's the main guy in the band, pretty much. He came up with all that stuff. He came up with... Literally, he built his own devices to create the Boston sound in his own studio in Watertown. And that first Boston album is just absolutely killer, Damon.
Oh, no doubt. It really, I was like, yes, good pick. I don't think people get how massive that album was. Like, and that's a debut album. And I really like massive debut albums when they just come out and just kick ass right out of the gate, you know? And every track on that album is just killer. The one thing that like just screams to me, though, is like, to me, like, it's like the 70s Siamese Dream by Smashing Pumpkins. Like, that is stadium sound and the thick guitars. And yeah, that it just, that album is, I don't think people really can conceptualize how massive that album was at the time.
Yeah, and the fascinating story behind it is they did the demo, and on the demo, it's Tom Scholz doing all the instruments except for the drums. And they get signed, and the label wants them to re-record the album in a proper studio. And they come up with this scheme where the rest of the band goes to L.A. Meanwhile, Tom Scholz records almost the entire album by himself in his home studio in Watertown. They do the mixing, put the album out, it sells 20 million copies, and the label never knew. It's a pretty wild story for your debut album to pull off those kind of hijinks there, Damon. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, that just didn't happen in the 70s, you know? It just didn't happen. I mean, you were just kind of bogged down with all these massive bands that were, you know, studios were, you know, churning out at the time thousands, if not millions of dollars to produce, and he just does it. You know, it is a pretty amazing story. And again, debut, everything, like, just go track by track on that album. It's just like, oh, I know that song. Mm-hmm. I didn't know they did that song. Oh, that song? I know that one. And it's that. Yeah. And here's the thing too. There's nothing like that album cover. Like, I guess Journey would be like the closest thing I can think of to be like those epic type of album covers. Like, that thing is just like iconic.
Yeah, the guitar spaceships, absolutely. Very very iconic cover, for sure. And also, Sib Haitian, the drummer, rest in peace, his daughter is now married to The Rock. So,
no way!
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there you go. But what's next there, Damon?
Well, a little switch up from guitars to synths, as the natural transition would be. This is a band... They were around, again, back in the day, and they weren't massive, but like when alternative music and synths and, you know, your bands like Depeche Mode and your bands like Erasure and your bands like, you know, to a certain degree, like Kraftwerk to a certain degree, were becoming popular, I think they met in art school, Philadelphia College of Art or whatever it was at the time, which was a pretty big deal back then. They formed and they had a bunch of minor hits, but like in the clubs and in like the, you know, the places that would play the music I liked, this was in heavy rotation. And I just remember going to the first time it was like a true proper club. And they would play like Duran and they would play Frankie and they would play, you know, Depeche and all this. And then they popped out this. And I was just like, whoa, what is this? And, you know, you didn't have Shazam back then. So you had to ask the DJ, hey, what the fuck are you playing? And he showed me it. And yeah, this is it. This is a band called Book of Love. And it is a song called Boy. We'll be right back. So I'm a sucker for hooks, right?
Me too. Yeah.
An absolute sucker, and it's those Chinese synths in there that I just remember the first time I heard it over the the big boomy speakers, and I'm just like, whoa, this is knocking my socks off. And I just remember going up to the DJ booth, and I was just he's like, what do you want to hear? I was like, I don't want to hear shit. I want to know what that is. And then, he told me what it was. And I think I saw them twice. But they were always local, always around, and, obviously heavily leaning into what was there with that 80s synth sound. But, yeah, it always reminds me of Philly. And my wife hates the song, which makes it even better for me.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, if you watch the video, he's actually playing the chimes in the video, this like stand-up chime set, which is pretty cool. Book of Love, a couple of things about them I find so interesting. Three keyboardists, which might be a record, I don't know. And also the singer, Susan Ottaviano, she has this lower registered voice, kind of deadpan, a lot of times. It's very distinct compared to someone like an Alison Moyet from Yazoo, or an Annie Lennox, who can get, a lot higher pitched. And the other thing is another band member is a guy named Ted Ottaviano, but they're not related. They just met in school by happenstance. So it's just one of those weird weird things, yeah.
I did not know that. At the time, that was kind of like the template of a synth pop band, right? You had the deadpan lyrics and somewhat monotone vocal styling. You're not really kind of hitting a range like the people that you mentioned that were, that had great, Vince Clark goes from Dave Gahan to Alison Moyet, and even Andy Bell, who had back in the day had a pretty great range too. So again, they're not massive. They're not anybody's, top 10 synth pop bands, but to come out of Philly was kind of remarkable in the sense that there really wasn't like that kind of scene. But at that time, and as you see, you just have different bands with different styles and different tastes and different outlooks on music all in, a 10 block radius, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other song from this album I know is I Touch Roses. I think that was correct. The first Book of Love song I ever heard. So, which is also pretty deadpanny, which lines up there. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I feel like this could be pulled from a John Hughes movie. I have no idea how they did not wind up being in one, but like
it's in that era, Yeah,
it really is. Yeah, I mean, they could have definitely slid in very, very easily. I'm excited to hear your next pick. All right.
Oh, well, thank you for the transition there. Yes, I will dedicate my next pick to my previous guest, Maura Johnston, because she named her cat after the guitarist of this band. The band is named Extreme. And the guitarist's name is Nuno Bettencourt. And I specifically wanted to highlight his guitar solo on this song. This is off of their second album, Extreme 2 Pornograffiti. Nice name there. And this is Get the Funk Out. Pretty good.
Oh my god. Yeah. I mean, talk about hammer-ons and pull-offs, right? That dude, he had it down. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Extreme, did they do More Than Words, right?
They did More Than Words. They did Play With Me, Get the Funk Out. They had some hits under their belt for sure, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, More Than Words is like the quintessential late 80s, early 90s wedding song. Like, so I can't tell you how many weddings I've been to. All right, we're going to bring up the bride and groom, and it's, you know, More Than Words. But yeah, that guy can just, I'm always amazed by guitar players, and especially in the 80s and 90s, where they, you know, a lot of, they were very much front facing, and, you know, they had dedicated time for their solos, and they made them their own, and just the distinctive sound that each one of those guitar players had. Like, what was the guy's name from Rat? Like, I just feel like he has such a distinctive sound. And like CeCe DeVille from Poison has a distinctive sound. Of course, Slash and all. But like even him, you know, that was pretty great, actually.
Yeah, I think Brian May from Queen said it's one of his favorite solos ever. Mm. He called it like a landmark in rock history. But that has to feel good if Brian May says if he's in awe of your talent. So yeah. That's a feather in his cap. And I know Nuno, he does a lot of guest work as well. He's actually Rihanna's longtime guitarist.
Wow.
In the studio and with her live band. And there's like video of him shredding at one of her concerts. You know, it's a pretty nice gig, I think. So, you know, Extreme had some hits, but it's Rihanna, for God's sake. Like, she's playing the Super Bowl and he's there with her. So, a pretty good career for old Nuno there.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I mean, seriously, the talent is there that you can't ignore it. He's going to find work, right? But yeah, it is pretty wild how some of those old-timey, you know, metal-y guitar players find work with the oddest people. You know, you just wouldn't see it, and yeah, they make it work. It's pretty awesome. I love your shows because you have so much knowledge of like just wrestling stuff, and just like you're able to pull out facts out of your head. Yeah, like people talk about Charlton, like you're the true fucking encyclopedia, dude. I got to be honest with you. Like, you are the man when it comes to that stuff.
Well, I have some help from my friends, Mr. Google and Mr. Wikipedia.
Well, true.
So,
all right,
you know.
Fine. Oh, so does he.
But yeah. I appreciate the kind words. Thank you, sir.
Yes, no problem.
What's your next pick?
All right, so again, we're talking back in the day. So shockingly enough, they had this thing called radio, and specifically FM radio, and also on these stations, the DJs had some type of, I mean, trust me, they stuck with a playlist, but they had a little bit more flexibility to kind of play, not necessarily what they wanted, but a little bit looser than this rigid playlist. We got to play this band four times an hour because we're going to lose listeners, blah, 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 blah. With that said, there was always this kind of little push on Philly bands. And there was a local DJ who was pretty famous in the area, Pierre Robert, who I believe is still on the air. At the mighty 93.3 WMOR. And he would, you know, promote local bands. So one of those bands was this band. And once again, we're not going to do the hit, but you might know the hit of Escalator of Life. So they shot the video for this particular song that we're going to play at a club on South Street in Philadelphia. And if I'm not mistaken, former MTV VJ, JJ Jackson is in the crowd, but, I tried to get in and I was too young. They carded me, and I couldn't get into the club and go to be in the video. But this song again, always reminds me of South Street, always reminds me of that time, always reminds me of getting rejected from going in. I was probably like 15, 14 at the time, if that, but yeah. They tried to make him a star, and didn't quite work out. But one of my favorite songs, nonetheless. This is Robert Hazard and the Heroes with Chain Reaction.
That's Change Reaction.
Change? Did I say chain? Change. My bad. That is correct. Change Reaction. I stink. Thank you.
They always made you feel so bad. Now that you're gone, you feel so glad. You cried till you danced all night. Change reaction, it's on you. No domino. Change reaction, show it through. Slow motion,
that 80s. I love it. That underlying synth, again, maybe like three or four chords, that just like sets the mood. Fun fact, Andrew, I believe I'm almost 90% sure that song was on the first time I believe I made out with a girl.
Oh.
I believe so. I thought it would be the cool guy, and I was like, I got a mixtape, and I had like Bauhaus on it, and like just like nonsense, and this was on that that tape. Yes, I can confidently say that that was on there. So Renee, thinking of you.
I would think this song would have a better chance of makeout time than Bela Lugosi's Dead. Just my opinion there.
Well, it's nice, David, and long. So. You know, it was a nice long song, so I knew I didn't have to flip the tape, as they were.
Yeah, Robert Hazard, I'm surprised he wasn't bigger, because he's a good-looking guy, he has a cool name, he can write a good tune. Like, he wrote Girls Just Want to Have Fun as a demo.
Correct.
But looking him up briefly, he only had a couple albums in this style in the 80s. Then there was a long gap until 98 when he started putting out like folk and country albums, and he did that until he died. So if he stuck around with this specific sound, maybe he could have broken out more, who knows, but it looks like he didn't really want that either. So it's just a case of, you know, this is what he probably should have done to be bigger, but he didn't really want to do that to be bigger, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is the, I use the term, the template of early 80s music. So, you know, there's a lot of bands. You get a band that's hot, and okay, so let's see if we can cash in on that wave. And again, I don't necessarily know if that was the case with him, but yeah, he definitely fell out of love with that sound and, you know, kind of, I don't want to say grew up, but yeah, he stepped away. I don't know if he was if he was ill, that the reason why he stepped away, but I remember when streaming services started to pick up, you know, these were some of the songs I was like, ah, I'd love to see, you know, that. And he wasn't on, like, wasn't on any streaming service. And I was like, ah. But then one day, I don't know how you just randomly search for stuff, and it was there. And it was like, I swear to God, it was one of the happiest days just hearing that song again and kind of getting it. And the video is on YouTube. It's a real crappy VHS dubbed video. But yeah, what could have been? I could have been dancing in that crowd with a young lady, but I wasn't old enough.
A young Damon amongst a sea of 80s haircuts and outfits. Oh, what could have been, man? What could have been?
Could have, I had one, trust me.
Yeah. Well, strangely enough, one more thing about Robert Hazard. He died in Boston of cancer. He died at Mass General. 59 years old. That's how young he was. It's pretty crazy.
I remember there was a dance show where, like, high school kids would dance on a show for, like, it was like Soul Train or, like, Club MTV, but it was local. It was Dancing on Air, and he performed there too. And I might still have that videotape somewhere in my house. But yeah, I was a fan. I was absolutely a fan.
All right. Well, I'm going to take a big left turn from my last pick here. I have a trio of gentlemen who are also part of a larger group. Now, the large group is named New Edition, but the trio is called Belle Biv DeVoe. And they come from the streets of Roxbury, Massachusetts, one of the Boston neighborhoods there. And if I'm playing a Belle Biv DeVoe song, I think we kind of know what I'm going to go with here. So I'll just play their big, big hit, Poison.
I sense something strange in my mind. Yo, situation is, let's cure it cause we're running out of time. Relationships, they seem from the start. It's all so deadly when love is not together from the heart. Check it out. It's driving me out of my mind. That's why it's hard for me to find. Can't get it out of my head. Miss her, kiss her, love
wrong
her.
Move, you're dead.
That girl is
poison.
Never trust
do I take?
Never trust a big button to smile there, Damon. The immortal words of Belle Biv DeVoe.
My wife will absolutely mark out over that. I'm telling you right now, you put that on any bar, any club, anywhere. Put it on in the car. You're going to get toes tapping. I'm telling you. It's impossible.
It's an undeniable jam, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't even call myself a big Belle Biv DeVoe fan or New Edition fan or whatever, but I tip my cap to them because they were the blueprint for the modern boy band. You know, before NSYNC, before the Backstreet Boys, before Boyz II Men, it was New Edition. You know, it is a fact that New Kids on the Block, also from Boston, was created as the white version of New Edition. And clearly they had the talent to back it all up, as going by that song and all the other hits. So, again, I'm not a huge fan of them, but I do pay them their respect because they deserve it.
Yeah. Early 80s, I was probably in sixth grade when New Edition was massive. And let it be known, they were pretty massive. The girls dug them. It was, you know, but the Candy Girl was probably their biggest hit, right? As New Edition. But then they morphed into that kind of early 80s, you know, samplers and MIDI and just the technology that's available to people producing. That's kind of like the beginning of people producing music at home to me. Like, that's kind of like the beginning of mashups and the beginning of really, I mean, there were remixes and dance mixes back in the day with bands, but that was like, you put that on and it flooded a dance floor, and two, like, there wasn't a girl that wasn't dancing. So if you're a guy, you're kind of like, oh, that's what it is? Okay, here we go. And trust me, I'm sitting here just kind of, you know, tapping my toes to it because you can't help it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and if you read up on their story, it's crazy. I mean, they had a bunch of hits. They sold a lot of albums, but they got like royally screwed by the labels so much. I mean, they made no money from their first tour. They sued to get out of their contract to go to MCA. They find out that they're not signed to MCA, but they're signed to a production company. So they borrow money from MCA to get out of that. And now they're in debt to MCA. So they need to keep working and touring. It's nuts. And the fact that, look, it's a bunch of poor black kids from the projects of Roxbury. Not the nicest part of town, by the way. I think it makes it even worse. So, you know, a huge, huge band, but not the nicest story for them, unfortunately.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of those bands kind of got shafted.
Oh, yeah. They're not alone for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like, you know, you go from being in, like, and we'll put it in air quotes, a kids group, boy band, and then kind of morphing into, okay, I'm an adult, I'm going to make some, you know, more mature dance music. And it's just like, those record labels are scum and they'll just eat you alive. And trust me, this, I'm sure this was before litigation with samples and stuff like that. So people, it was kind of like the wild, wild west when it came to that. But yeah, that sucks. I mean, how can you write a song like that and not be set for life? that's the crying shame of all of this, is that a lot of these things that we're playing right now, they probably don't have a pot to piss in right now.
Yeah, well, I think it's this month, the city of Boston is actually doing a bunch of events to honor New Edition. Nice. With like a mural, a street dedication, a concert. So it is nice to see them get their flowers at least all these years later from the actual city too. So yeah.
No doubt. No doubt. Yeah. Like I said, my wife would, when I tell her that that's played, she'll be like, can you cue it up to that part? I don't want to hear you. I don't hear them.
What do you got next for us, Damon?
Well, this is probably the most mainstream popular group to come out of Philadelphia. And it's not Boyz II Men. It's a band that had so many hits, and kind of popularized that Philly Motown-y soul sound that was really prevalent and very popular. It's weird because it's like, I'll go to places, I'll go to London or I'll go to, even Japan mentioned, like, there was, like, we were playing music at this bar. They had a record player. And they would put on vinyl as we're drowning ourselves in beer. And I forget who it was, but somebody, like, wanted Hall & Oates to be put on. The guy had every album under the sun. Put it on, and he specifically mentioned that Philly, kind of Philly soul sound. Also, I will say, this song is my favorite hockey team's goal song. So every time they score a goal, it does bring a little smile to me, because I know we're doing good. We're scoring goals every time you hear this song. It is the great, and they don't like each other anymore. There's a restraining order between the two, but I'm sure that'll get it. Listen, if Oasis can get back together, these guys can make it. It's Hall & Oates, and it's You Make My Dreams Come True. Voice, right?
Great.
What
stuff.
A voice. What great a voice. Stuff. Just, I mean, if you just Wikipedia them and just look at the amount of hits that that duo had, just, you're just like, oh, I know that one. 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 And I'm sorry, you put that song on anywhere around here, it's like everybody kind of lights up. Everybody's eyes widen, and they're like, all right, you know, it is that. It is. It's like one of those safe songs. That you know that it will cross generations, that people know, and I don't know. I just dig the upbeatiness of it, and I think he's got just one of the best voices in rock. So, Hall & Oates.
Yeah, of your picks, this is obviously the one that I know the most of. They got a million hits, as you said. And this song in particular, it always reminds me of a scene in the movie 500 Days of Summer, where Joseph Gordon-Levitt is in love with Zooey Deschanel, and they finally have sex, and he walks to work afterwards, and it turns into like this big dance scene with like a marching band and this coordinated dancing going on and the music playing, and there's like cartoon birds chirping. It's really funny because it is the most like happy, positive song pretty much ever, I think. So it's a classic, and it is, like you said, it is a shame that they are broken up now, and they're not just broken up, but a legal battle going on right now, and they both said it's over, and they'll never get back together. However, last time on this very show, we played Oasis, and we talked about the odds of them getting back together, and now they're getting back together. So, I'm just saying, if anyone can reunite these two men, it might be us, Damon. It might just be us.
Let's go. Let's do it. Let's do it. It's a shame, because they're all both old in age at this point. So, you know, the clock is a ticking, and I just hate to have people like that. There's a restraining order. Like, it's that bad. So, I don't know, fingers crossed. It would be massive if they do get back together. I think, it'd be one of those things where it's like, you know, people would just be so excited and happy that they finally made amends and play the hits, and yeah, that'd be pretty awesome.
Okay. My next pick, I'm going to play possibly the most Boston band of all time. Because it's a bunch of loud Irish Democrats singing about the Red Sox. And you cannot get more Boston than that, Damon, I don't think. This is Dropkick Murphys, named after a wrestler, by the way. There was a John Dropkick Murphy back in the day. And I went with their song called Tessie.
The grounds one day, they found the seats had all been sold. Me! put the game on hold. The rudest gave the other team a dreadful fright. Boston's 10th man could not be wrong. Up from third base to Huntington, they sang another victory song.
Listen, I'm not even a huge Celtic punk guy, but how can I not love that song? Right. I mean, it's so great. And it's also kind of a meta song as well, because the original Tessie was a song from a 1902 Broadway musical. And it became like this rallying cry for this group of fans called the Royal Rooters, who were fans of the Boston Americans, which was like the precursor to the Red Sox. And this song is about those old fans singing that song, the old song, to help the Americans win the 1903 World Series. Mm. And the Murphys recorded the song in 2004 before the Red Sox won the World Series that year as a way to, you know, cheer them on. And they ended up winning the World Series. So it was a pretty good turn of events there, I think, Damon. So yeah,
worked out pretty well for you, right? There's when we talked about doing this, like, and again, you mentioned the areas that you grew up in, and Boston being the big focus. Like, there's no band that popped into my mind for, you know, before Dropkick Murphys. And they're one of those bands where they're good. I love them. And they get better the more you drink, right? You know, the more you let your inhibitions down and you just sing along and you're with your friends and you're just having a good time, right? Yeah, that's what they remind me of. Like, they remind me of good times with friends with alcohol. It really does.
Yeah, some bands, it doesn't matter really where they come from, but I think in this case, the Murphys are unmistakably Boston. They wear their love for Boston right on their sleeves. They have several songs about Boston. I mean, Shipping Up to Boston is, of course, the big one, but this one will always be my favorite, I think, just because of how amazing that 04 win was. And I know people are going to roll their eyes because Boston has won so many titles since then. But back then, it was the craziest thing ever. I mean, down 3-0 to the Yankees, no one ever did a comeback like that. And we did it, and then swept the World Series, and we ended the drought after so many years. So, yeah. And it's just a great song in general, I think. So, hey, listen. Stick it where the sun don't shine and get a problem with that, folks. Okay, eh? Let my Charlestown peep through here. I don't know. All right.
I love it. Look, it's – and again, I can relate in the sense that I grew up at that time and watched all those games. And, you know, while I couldn't relate to the heartbreak that Boston fans must have felt, there was a lot of heartbreak. I mean, a ton of heartbreak. So – yeah, I mean, I think everybody in America was rooting for them. Even if you were like a Yankees fan, like, you were rooting for them to finally fucking get it. So, yeah, absolutely. Cool. Awesome.
What do you got next for us there, Damon?
Oh, boy, here we go. So, back in the day again, I played high school soccer, and I was the goalkeeper on our varsity team, and we had a practice. And where the practice fields were at the high school, if you walked through the soccer field and to the other side, there was a highway. And on the other side of that, you know, not super highway, but, you know, like a three-laner, was a club. And it was called Dick Lee's. Dick Lee's, which turned into what was renamed the Pennant. And then it has since been torn down and is now public storage. But back then, we were practicing, and every town has one, the town vagrant, right? Well, the town vagrant decided he was going to walk across the field as we're having a practice. So everybody's like, Gola, what are you doing? He's like, I'm coming back from Dick Lee's. Like, what are you doing at Dick Lee's? It's it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. He's like, all the hot buxom women hang out there. I was like, huh? Everybody laughed. So Dick Lees and the Pennant would always have local bands. And back in the day, it was, you know, hair metal kind of ruled the world at that time. And we had a couple local bands that made a name for themselves. One of them is Cinderella, that would play Dick Lees all the time. And the second is this band. It is a band in my senior yearbook, there's a picture of this band in their full hair metal regalia and our principal. And the running joke is, oh, which one's the principal? It is the massive Brittany Fox. That's right. And the song is Long Way to Love. I'm sorry, Andrew. I love hair metal. I really do. It's one of those.
That's good stuff. It's good.
And here's the thing, too. Like, they both had that distinctive vocal sound. Like, I don't know if it was like what they drank or what they took or what it was. Maybe it was the Aquanet hairspray that got in their throat. Like, that voice, that high pitched, kind of squealy, raspy. I don't know. Like I just, like, my vocal cords just, I feel like they would explode. But they tried. They got a little bit of MTV rotation. I think they did like a couple like opening tours with like Motley Crue and all them. But yeah, they tried. Didn't quite hit, but I don't know. That's just that song. You know who, you'll hear that on, if you have Sirius on that Hair Nation channel. Every once in a while, they'll bust that out, and I'll be like, yes. And my wife will just be like, oh, Jesus Christ. Really? I'm like, come on, let's go. But yeah, they were that band that everybody's like, oh, maybe they'll be big. Maybe they'll be big. And it didn't happen. But I don't know. I kind of remember like the energy that was there, like that, okay, they're local. Let's see what we can do to make it happen. You know, even if it wasn't your scene, like, everybody kind of got behind this band to do something. And I think their biggest hit was Girl School, I want to say. But yeah, I always gravitated to that. That's a Long Way to Love.
Yeah, I think if you know the name Brittany Fox, you know your glam metal. You know, Poison, Rat, Motley Crue, those are the big names. But if you know like Brittany Fox or Kix, Jackal, Dangerous Toys, you know your stuff.
LA Guns, yeah.
LA Guns, yeah, yeah. I mean, and these guys in particular, this debut album, it came out in 88. And I think if they put this out just a couple years earlier, they could have wrote a bigger wave, because it went gold, but it's 88. And a few years later, here comes grunge, and there goes Brittany Fox. And they came in at the wrong time, unfortunately, there, Damon.
They did. And fun fact, the drummer of Brittany Fox plays, and I don't know if he still does because COVID and, you know, these type of things kind of shut down, but he was in a NXS tribute band. And like, I'm looking at him, like, I'm like, I know this guy. Where do I know this guy from? And obviously he's much older. And so I went up to him and I was like, I hate this question. I feel like a boob, but where do I know you? And he's like, I used to play in Brittany Fox. I was like, that's it. That's it. So I thought that was pretty odd as well. He's in an NXS tribute band.
Well, look, you know, a gig's a gig. So
right?
Got to do what you got to do there, I guess. So,
Yeah, he's probably working in customer service somewhere right now, and then at night he turns into the drummer of all drummers. So yeah, back in the day they tried, but didn't quite work out.
It's a common tale. Yes. Well, my next pick is from a town called Wellesley, Massachusetts, and he had quite a few hits back in his heyday. The man's name is Billy Squire, and he put out an album in '82 called Emotions in Motion. And yeah. This song is called Everybody Wants You.
Yeah,
Squire, baby. How about that?
Yes.
I mean, that guy, he was on a roll in the early 80s. The Stroke, Lonely as the Night.
Yes.
My Kind of Lover.
Yes.
In the Dark. Everybody
yes.
Wants You. And then the infamous music video for Rock Me Tonight came out, and it just pumped the brakes right on that old career of his, because you've got this, you know, arena rock guy in a pink tank top, prancing around a bed with pastel-colored satin sheets in 1984. It did not go well, folks. And
no, it did not.
Yeah, it effectively just halted his career right there. And it's a shame, because he's a great singer, he's a great musician, he can write a great song, but, you know, one music video, and that's all she wrote, pretty much. It's a real shame there, Damon.
Yeah, and that is the truth. Like, that, first of all, let's back then, it was, you know, MTV's blossoming, right? So he was in such heavy rotation, and especially that album, like all those hits that you rattled off, like MTV was in love with him, and he would be played all the time, and that's how I think the majority of people kind of got exposed to him. And he was everywhere, like everywhere. You could play him on a top 40 station, you could play him on a rock station, you could play him anywhere, and it would be totally acceptable. So the anticipation for that next album was pretty massive, and it came out and it was just like a fart in church. Like, it was like, what am I watching? Like, this video might be the hokiest video of all time. So like in one sense, MTV helped make him. I really truly believe that. Like, there are bands like Adam and the Ants and even Duran Duran, and, you know, where the heavy rotation and helped them get exposed to a broader audience, and he was it. And like, he had the album to back it up, and then that second album and that first single and that video specifically, go out of your way to watch it, because it is just hokey, hokey, hokey.
Yeah, the good thing about being on MTV in the 80s is it can make you, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The bad thing about being on MTV in the 80s is it can also break you if the music video is not received well. And yeah, he hasn't toured in several years. I think his last album was 98. But there is a bright side. He has been sampled like a ton in like rap songs. Like, he's got this song called The Big Beat, which I think the drum beat has been like sampled in like a million songs. So he's still got that royalty money, I'm sure. He's still got, you know, the hits on the radio. You listen to, you know, classic rock radio or whatever, you'll hear The Stroke. You'll hear My Kind of Lover or what have you. But he hasn't really been active all that much in quite a long time. So
I would love to go. I would see him. I would see him live. I really would. I'd go see him live. Like Lonely as the Night. Oh, what a great song. Come on.
Pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah. The pride of Wellesley, Massachusetts, Billy Squire. And, God, I mean, he was on a roll in one video, and that's all it took.
It is amazing. And that is the honest to God truth. Like, there wasn't a scandal. There wasn't a thing. It was like he just laid a turd
pink tank top.
That
a pink tank top and some prancing around. It was just horrible. And that's it. That's all it took.
Because he was very blue collar. Like, he was very, like, he wasn't like Bruce Springsteen, mind you, but like, he was like a blue collar kind of guy and, you know, dopey, you know, rock guys, you know, saw that video and were just like, oh my God, what are we doing here? But like, it wasn't even like macho-y thing. It was just hokey. Like, it was just dumb. Like, I don't know. Whatever. I love him.
Well, let's change gears here, Damon. What's your next pick?
Oh boy. Yeah, we certainly are. So, full disclosure, this is really not my speed when it comes to music, right? But being that we are so intertwined in the pro wrestling talk and what we love, there is a band that is local to me in the Philadelphia area that is somewhat, I'll say, notorious in the sense that, like, when people associate wrestling-themed bands, I think this one is, you know, on the tip of a lot of people's tongue if you're into that, right? And full disclosure, my brother is in that band. My brother is in this band. I don't know if he's like full time and all, but like, there was like a documentary on this band, and he, you know, obviously took part in it. And there's plenty of live performances that you could see of them. It's a band called Eat the Turnbuckle. What a great name. Eat the Turnbuckle, as in George the Animal Steel. And he, like, all their songs are pro wrestling themed. Like, if you can decipher the lyrics between the rah, 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 they are all pro wrestling themed, right? So they are massive pro wrestling fans. And this is Eat the Turnbuckle with False Count Anywhere. That is the sound of Satan, I believe.
Somebody get that man a lozenge. My God.
Right. So, like, my brother would always have, like, I don't want to say hustles, because they really weren't hustles, but they were kind of hustles. But he always had one, right? So he was a guy that, like, I'm going to sell barbed wire baseball bat lamps at ECW shows. I'm like, who's going to fucking buy a barbed wire baseball bat lamp? So, you know, he would just kind of have all these little ideas that he would do. Now, I'm going to be in a band. We're like, okay. I mean, he was very much into the Philly hardcore scene, my brother. So that didn't necessarily shock me, but he had no musical talent whatsoever, right? I guess the best description of him in the band would be, he's like Flavor Flav. He's like... was it Bez from Happy Mondays, right? He's just a guy that's there that does stuff. Like, he doesn't play an instrument. He sings every once in a while. He'll get put through a table. He'll bleed. All for the love of the art. And I remember one time I went to a show, and I was like, wow, dude, that's something. Like, it was funny in the sense of, you know, my brother was a big shock guy. Not shock rock, not like Alice Cooper, but more like Gigi Allen kind of shock rock. So there was always that little element to him, and he kind of made that work with this band. But yeah, they would do like all kinds of, and every once in a while he would hit me up and be like, hey, I'm playing here. If you want to come out, I'll get you in. No problem. I was like, all right. You know, like I said, it's not for me, but the theatrics of it and the pro wrestling stuff that they do, I dig it. It's kind of fun.
Well, all due respect to your brother, I do not dig that at all.
Right.
That is firmly not for me. No, thank you.
Yeah. I'm with you. Like I said, it's certainly not something you put on at the barbecue. Let's put it that way.
No. I do like the album cover, though. I do like it because it's made up like an old school wrestling magazine. It's even dated Spring 76. It's got like modern day wrestlers on there, but they're all bloodied up.
No, that's my brother.
Oh, shit. Really?
So the guy in the main picture with the tattoos on his arm.
Yeah.
That's my brother.
Wow. How about that?
Yep. That's him. Yeah. Like I said, he doesn't play an instrument. He's like a hype guy that does stuff for the band. And, you know, hey, look, it makes him happy. What am I going to do?
The pride of the family, I'm sure, with that photo on the mantle, I'm sure.
Oh, well done. All right, what do you got next? I'm excited for yours.
Okay, well, I think the transition from that song to my next pick will give you whiplash, because we're playing something very different from that. This is an indie band that broke up, I think, about 10 years ago or so. The band is called The Main Drag, and I discovered this song when I was playing Rock Band 2 back in high school, and whenever I hear it, I get very nostalgic for it, and for those days. This is off of the album called Yours As Fast As Mine, and this song is called A Jagged, Gorgeous Winter.
Black eyes and hidden lies. Sheets of snow concealing. Gloves on hands with warmer fasts. Plastic sleds cracking. Newly jacked. Huddling against the walls. Shrinking college trends.
That's the only song of theirs I really know, but it brings me back to those days of playing Guitar Hero and the Rock Band games, and the company that did those first couple Guitar Hero games and then switched over to Rock Band was a company called Harmonix, and they're based out of Boston, and a lot of the bonus songs in those games are indie bands that worked at Harmonix, including this band. I think three of the members actually worked at the company. So that's how they got in the game. And yeah, it gives me that warm, fuzzy feeling of being back in high school when I was, oh, so young, Damon, and had a better hairline and my hair wasn't graying and I didn't have tax to pay and rent to pay and all this adult bullcrap. I hate it, Damon. I want to go back. Take me back, Damon, please.
I would love to. I'm building the time machine as we speak. That was a great song. I never heard that song before. I will be downloading that immediately. That's my wheelhouse right there. The voice, the first thing I thought of was he sounds like the singer from, I don't know if you're familiar with the band, The Postal Service.
I played them in the last episode. I love The Postal
Service. No way.
Yes.
The voice is very similar. Again, obviously less electronic elements, more guitar. But that is like 2000s in a nutshell for me, that sound. You know, that's that kind of bouncy bass and guitar. Yeah, I'm downloading that immediately. I like that a lot.
Yeah. All right, what do you got next for us?
All right, so when we talk Philly, and we're talking 80s, of course, there's one band that cannot be ignored. We talked a little bit about like Robert Hazard and his influence on others. I think this band had more influence on 80s songs than people realize, in the sense of one of the singers and key founders, I believe his name is Rob Hyman, wrote or co-wrote or wrote the whole thing, maybe, a lot of Cyndi Lauper's debut album. Well, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, Money Changes Everything, Sheba, all that. And the band, again, everybody was kind of like, okay, this is Philly's chance, right? And everybody kind of rallied around this band, and they were pretty big in the area. From what I understand, they were big in Germany, right? And the guy that I do a lot of the sports stuff I do, he is related to Rob as well. And I remember him being in the Flyers locker room, and the guy I work with, Mike, kind of, you know, showing him around and introducing. And I was just like, ah, that's pretty cool. Because I remember this band opening Live Aid. So Live Aid was my first concert, right? And I just remember walking into JFK Stadium, which was this gigantic old-timey type stadium, and just a sea of people, just like 100,000 people in this sweltering hot 9 o'clock in the morning already, but it's burning hot. And they opened, and everybody was just like, oh my God, the Hooters are opening. The Hooters are opening, because they were one of us, right? So this is not off their debut. I think their debut was called Nervous Night, I want to say. This is off their second album. But it's just one of those songs that, again, if I'm like, give me a hook and I'll jump right in. And this is one of those songs. This is the Hooters with Satellite. So around this time, it was the old, televangelists were under the microscope a little bit. Your 700 clubs and all those people. And then that's them kind of poking fun at them and, you know, how they rip people off. And, you know, if you're good, we'll get you a satellite and you can beam your phony messages all over. I don't know. It is funny in the sense that, like, the Hooters were pretty famous for having that. You blow into the keyboard. You hold it. It was like a little keyboard, but you blew into
the melodica.
Nozzle.
Yeah,
Is that what it's called? Melodica. Nobody plays that anymore. Yeah, nobody plays that anymore, right? I think Depeche Mode probably made it famous on Everything Counts, but that's about it. But yeah, they were pretty – they really leaned into that instrument for whatever reason, thus the name. So it is a little bit dated, but I don't know. I dig that song again. Give me a hook, and I'm right there.
Yeah, they're another band. I think they could have been bigger because I think their song "And We Danced" is a classic. They do a good cover of "The Boys of Summer" as well. And yeah, that sound, that combining the big rock sound with an accordion and a mandolin and a melodica, all these unconventional instruments for a rock band, it's pretty unique. And I don't know, maybe the name kind of snag them, because the restaurant I think did take a lot of the their thunder perhaps. But yeah, they have some good songs, and you mentioned them opening up at Live Aid in Philly. The story goes that Bob Geldof did not want them on the show.
Yeah, he didn't know who they were.
He didn't think they were a big enough name, and Bill Graham, the promoter, forced them on the show. And I think Geldof's immortal line in an interview was, "Who the fuck are the Hooters?" So, you know, they didn't make friends with him, unfortunately. But yeah, whenever I hear the Hooters, I tend to enjoy it. So, good band.
Yeah, they're good. I mean, like I said, that first album was pretty big around here. They were kind of close with Patti Smyth of the band Scandal, so they did like a little duet, Where Do the Children Go, which was pretty big around here. And We Dance was probably their biggest hit. I'm trying to think of like what else they had, but yeah, again, they tried. And opening up Live Aid, that whole documentary is pretty good, how Bill Graham was just a miserable prick. it was really touch and go of that concert even happening in Philly, because this guy was just such a miserable prick. But yeah, he put the Hooters on first, and then it was, I think it was like Joan Baez was next. But yeah, that's kind of like their claim to fame, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, my next pick grew up in the Mission Hill neighborhood of Boston. Her birth name is Donna Gaines, but she became much more famous under a different name, that being Donna Summer. And I went with her version of the song MacArthur Park.
Birds like tender babies in your hand, and the old men play shiny checkers by the tree. Because
what a voice, what a talent, and what a duo with her and Giorgio Moroder. A real magic combination there. And I love the Richard Harris version of that song, but the way that she just hits that sustained high note, I get chills every time I hear it. And, I mean, my God, Hall & Oates had hits. Donna Summer had hits. I mean, yep. Just an absolute juggernaut of a performer and a career. And, yeah, she grew up not too far from me in Mission Hill. And she's just, you know, a timeless classic voice.
Absolute legend. And it's cool because it's like, you know, back in the day, you didn't listen to disco, or you listened to Kiss, or, you know, whatever, when you're 8 years old. But as I grew older, and like the bands that I liked, you could hear her influence in bands that I liked. And you're like, oh, that Duran Duran bass line. Oh, so that's where they got it. In excess. And I think it's like her and Chic and Nile Rodgers and that whole crew helped, you know, unbeknownst to me, you know, I didn't really know a lot about them in the sense of, you know, they weren't on my radar. But then the bands that I listened to, and you could hear the influence, Blondie, like Atomic, you know, that bass line.
Yep.
You know, there's just such, you know, how that crosses over so well. Yeah, she's a legend. And the voice. Yeah, fuck, come on. Jesus. And I think I'll go so far as to say this. Absolutely underrated. Absolutely underrated.
Yeah. I mean, again, kind of like New Edition, she really set the template for so many people who came after her. You know, people like Whitney Houston or Mariah Carey or Beyonce and so many others. And, you know, I was never really a Donna Summer guy. Growing up, I was more of the rock guy, the male guy. I didn't really get into her until after she died. But, you know, you put on a greatest hits and you're hearing MacArthur Park, I Feel Love, Love to Love You Baby, you know, Last Dance, all these songs, they're undeniable. And I can say right now, I'm a big fan of hers, because how can you not be? She's too good to not be a fan of.
Yeah, I think, honestly, she's one of those people that deserves more flowers, one, and two, I think if people listened, like if there was a way that they could just be like, okay, everyone should dedicate an hour and listen to Donna Summer, and I think like people would be blown away by just her sound and again, just how all the things that you listen to now, how much they're influenced by that period and that sound, and specifically her. Yep, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right, Damon, what is your final pick for us?
Last one. By the way, again, what a pleasure. I absolutely love the idea. I was excited to do this, and it has paid off in spades. So I appreciate it. This has been fantastic. Last song. So I'm at a rather recently, somewhat recently, we'll call it. And I went to go see, I couldn't even tell you the band I went to go see, to be quite honest with you. But I remember talking to the bartender, and she was, I don't know how we just started talking about music, and I don't know. I forget how it came about. But I do remember where the conversation kind of led to. And it was kind of like, oh, so what do you listen to? And kind of rattled off bands. And she rattled off bands. And some of them I know, and some of them were a little bit more current, and maybe I wasn't up on, right? And this is one of them. So the leader of this band coincidentally worked at the venue that I was seeing this band that I forget who it was. And the bartender mentioned that. And I was like, wait a minute, I've heard of this band. And or a band maybe be a loose term, just like, you know, it's kind of like Trent Reznor is Nine Inch Nails, right? I was like, yeah, okay. So then I went home and kind of got into listening, and I was just amazed by the sounds and like the vocals and the way that she sings, and I don't know, there was something there that dare I say touched me. And it's a rather current E band, and I think they're very popular, and I just thought it was weird that the young lady worked in that very venue. And if I'm not mistaken, I don't really even know her name. But when she came back to the club that she worked at, I mean, I think they sold out like 10 nights, which is pretty cool. It's a band. The name of the band is Japanese Breakfast, which I think is also a very cool name. It's Japanese Breakfast, and the name of the song is B-Sweets.
Tell them that I'm coming. Tell them count the days. I can feel the night passing by like a mistake waiting for me. Caught up in my feelings. Overthink the truth. Fantasize you left me behind and I'm turned back running for you. Make it up to me, you know it's better. Make it up to me, you know it's better. Be sweet to me, baby. I wanna believe in you, I wanna believe. Be sweet to me, baby. I wanna believe in you, I wanna believe in something.
So, you know, the one thing that hits me right over the head is that bass, right? That Roxy Music, Japan, the band, that kind of bubbly bass, I guess that's the best way I describe it, is the first thing that I heard. And I was like, whoa, this sounds really familiar to me. And so that was the first thing. And then her voice, I really dig. And just the way that she constructs songs, I think, is really creative. And it feels like she wears her influences on her sleeves, and a lot of those influences are things that I gravitate toward. And just a real creative, different and atmospheric and yet modern take on music. So, I'm a fan. I got to be honest with you. I am an absolute fan, and I got to thank that bartender for the recommendation.
Yeah, that song is fantastic. I first heard it a couple months ago, and it went into my Spotify liked playlist right away. Mm. I love that hook. And the music video is great too, because it's her and another woman who is from this other Philly band called Mannequin Pussy.
Yes.
Swear to God. But the video is them recreating the X-Files. And there's the line, I want to believe in you, I want to believe. One of the, I guess, taglines of the show was, I want to believe. So it's a nice little touch there, I think. Yeah, great song, great vocals, great bass line. And the lead singer, Michelle Zauner, not actually Japanese. She is half Korean. The reason the band is called Japanese Breakfast is because she saw a GIF of a Japanese breakfast and thought, that sounds exotic, and the name stuck. So, you know, it's just one of those weird, you know, backstories for a band's name, I guess. So,
yeah, I love it. I think everything about it is just, I don't know, it's just such an energy there. And again, I kind of feel a little young in the sense that, you know, you have someone that's probably half my age making great music that sounds like it could be dropped back in that time machine. So, like, that to me, you know, again, she puts her own spin on it, but it's something that I can absolutely relate with. Yeah, I'm a fan. Like I said, I'm definitely a fan.
All right. Well, my last pick is a band. Originally, they formed in Vermont, but they became based out of Boston for the rest of their career. They're like a roots rock indie jam band kind of thing, which I'm not really a huge fan of, but I do like this song a lot because, again, it makes me nostalgic. The band is called Dispatch, and off the album Bang Bang, this song is called The General.
But on the eve of a great battle with the infantry and dream, the old general tossed in his sleep and wrestled with its meaning. He awoke from the night to tell what he had seen and walked slowly out of his tent. All the men held tall with their chests in the air, with the courage in their blood and a fire in their stare. And it was a gray morning and they all wondered how they would fare. Till the old general told them to go home. He said, I have seen the others and I have discovered that this fight is not worth fighting. And I've seen their mothers and I will no other to follow me where I'm going. So take a shower and shine your shoes, you got no time to lose. You are young men, you must be living. Take a shower and shine your shoes, you got no time to lose. You are young men, you must be living. Go now, you are forgiven.
Yeah, so I went to overnight camp in Brookline, New Hampshire at Camp Tevia. And this song was on all the counselors' iPods. And it got played a lot at campfires, too. So it brings me back, again, to those days at summer camp with my friends at Camp Tevia. And, you know, again, I'm not a big Dispatch fan. I do know a couple other songs like this one. But yeah, I do like this song a lot. Both because of nostalgia and also because I think it's just a good song there, Damon. So, yeah, there's my final pick.
Yeah, no, I get it. Like, and I feel like, you know, if you're a camp counselor, you have to like jam bands. I think it's a requirement. I think it's a requirement. But, yeah, no, I have a buddy who loves all the jam bands. That would be right up his alley. So, I call it the flip-flop music, you know, because they're wearing flip-flops. But, yeah, I mean, it's a clean sounding sound. It's not, you know, something that I would necessarily gravitate to, but yeah, that is a camp counselor song, so I definitely see where the memories could be logged in your brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Dispatch, I guess their claim to fame is 20 years ago they had this farewell concert, and they've gotten back together since, but they had this farewell concert at this place called the Hatch Shell, which is where they do the big 4th of July celebration every year in Boston with the fireworks and the Boston Pops and all that stuff. And they expected, I think, somewhere between 10 and 30,000 people to show up. And I think it was reportedly over 100,000 people showed up.
Wow.
And they had to close down Sturrow Drive, which is like this major roadway in Boston. It's how I get to work nowadays, actually. But yeah, it just goes to show you, you know, a band might not seem like the biggest band in the world in other parts of the country, but in our part of the country, they can shut down streets. So it just goes to show you the power of the hometown crowd there, Damon.
Yeah, and it's amazing how like that happens. And again, I think local radio has a lot to do with that, but also that grassroots of, hey, my friend's brother's cousin is in this band, so you know, now you're supporting them. Mm-hmm. Right. It may not be your scene, but yeah, that I love that idea of, they're our team, right? They're our band. They represent us, and we want them to succeed. So, yeah, it's very cool. I hate that it's over. I could probably do 8 more songs, but I'm going to everybody else. But thank you so much, man. This has been so much fun. I always love talking to you, but just to dedicate this to music, and I know that's a passion of both of ours. So, thanks. I really appreciate being on, man.
Yeah, man. Well, thank you. Thank you. It's always so much fun whenever you're on the show here, of course. So thanks, man. Any plugs you want to give? Go right ahead.
Hey, it's the Super J-Cast. I'm sure we all get tired of hearing my dumb voice, as well as Joel's, but we do it every week. We talk New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I don't know. I think we've mellowed a little bit in our older age, but yeah, we have a lot of fun talking about the product, and we've gotten to the point where we talk a lot about stuff with people in the company, outside the company, all over the place. So again, I'm pretty proud of what we've been able to accomplish. I think our Twitter handle is the Super JCast. It might be. I don't tweet. I think Joel handles a lot of it, but you know, you can follow us there. But yeah, you can find us on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network, wherever you get your fine podcasts. Yeah, give us a listen. Give us a try if you haven't already.
All right. Well, our Twitter, Music of the Mat. If you want to leave a comment about this episode or share your picks, voicesofwrestling.com/Discord. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. And of course, make sure you subscribe on Apple, Spotify, your player of choice, all that rigmarole. Damon, let's go out with another band from Boston.
Mm-hmm.
A band, some people might call them the Pixies, but they are just Pixies, my friend.
Nice.
And I went with a song off their big, big album, Doolittle. And this is one of my favorites, Here Comes Your Man. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Damon. I'll see you around.
Music of the Mat is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The songs used throughout this show are property of their respective copyright holders.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voice of Wrestling Network.